Okay, I just don't know why I'm in the Net Radio panel, but I think I have found some common. So I won't be speaking about Net Radio, but the distribution of information. I think this is a new way of distribution information. The question, from who to who, is what I'm trying to reveal in a presentation I call POP. Or the meaning of sampling technology in pop music, in contemporary pop music. I try to not to use so many technical information, technical words. I'm trying to consider much more pop culture, I think. So in the age of Mozart, I think what he was written and played was progressive contemporary pop music. He used instruments, he used melodies and rhythms to express his feelings. This is what we call music in a normal or classical sense. And if we ask this question, what is music now? The skeptics say that Mozart has done everything which that could be done with those 12 notes. And yes, I think I agree with them. So what else left for the eager living pop hunger crowd? I don't think that they need the same old shite. Like perhaps you could say, yes, they need the same pop. But if you take a closer look what we call now pop as an archetypical circus, you can see that the concept has changed very, very much. Sampling, if you use the term, is that you record something digitally, or if we call it a digital sampler, something sounds event you record digitally and you play it back. This is more simply, but of course you can distort this sound event, you can make real-time or not real-time manipulations to it, you can play back it another pitch or stuff, but just for instance there is an EMU system, EMAX2. It is basically a sampler. It records sound event and plays it back to you. Samplers, or this kind of machines, I can say, was first considered as the mellotron in the 70s. The mellotron was like a keyboard, and for each key it has a tape. And if you push the key, the tape was recorded the sound event, and if you played it once, it played it back. So it was something like a analog sampler, and this was mainly for I can say experimental reasons, for experimental artists. Brian Eno used this machine very much, and with this kind of concepts that he just recorded sound events and played it back, he formed the now popular style, what is called ambient, in the 70s with music for the airports and these kind of stuff. So nobody was really interested in these machines, because the first machines was used to make sounds, was like synthesizers. People wanted to build really sounding events from oscillators and stuff, and there came the Moog, which is basically an organ, or they would like to use it as an organ, so it would present a real instrument. Like, you don't have to bring your church organ with you because it's impossible, but you just brought this Moog, and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and these kind of pop groups made it real popular to use it. And for instance, the most popular band was Doors, who used some kind of synthesizer at first. And this concept that you should just record something and play it back was revealed somewhere in the first of the 90s, the first half of the 90s, with I don't know how it really came up, but I can say some real date. Yeah, Paul Hardcastle with a song called 19 in 1983 was the first guy who published a pop song that has just nothing like just a beat and some samples from the Second World War news put up on it, this, and it went to top 40 in England. I use this top 40 in England term very much because if we speak about pop music, the English top 40 is the basic, I can say. There was a very big silence then, and in 1987, the group, who is called now as Cold Cut, made their first appearance with this kind of music. These two guys, just have historic background, Moore and Black, now the founder of the Ninja Tune Records, playing very experimental drum and bass and trip-hop like music. Then they were, from their basic, they are teachers. And they turned to this instrument, the sampler, as some kind of really new and weird stuff. But it's not so known about them. Then they done this song. It's not really interesting, the name, in 1987. They were pop producers. They started to produce, this was Stansfield, and they started to produce some others like Yaz, The Only Way Is Up, this song is from them, so Cold Cut wrote it. And the founder of Hex, experimental multimedia company as well. So they are right now producing, one of the most interesting interactive CD-ROMs involving music tracks. So these people were the know-how people somewhere behind pop music. And in the same year, in 1987, came the big break, the groundbreaking song from M.A.R.R.S., what is called Pump Up the Volume. This song was constructed just from samples. So they just used other people's song, just beats and pieces from other people's songs, and they even sampled Cold Cut as well. And this song was the first top 40 song, not top 40, top 40, so it reaches the first place in the English charts. And this was the first house track as well in pop music. From this time, we can say that the sampler is in the pop business. Then came two guys who are known as Jim Colty and William Drummond, or as the Justified in Ancients of Moo or the Copyright Liberation Foundation. Basically, they are the KLF, as you know them in the pop business. These two guys are in their 40s right now. They come from the punk, and they are mainly crazy. This is their profession, that they're crazy. And they made the first, the Guinness record of the most remix song with What Time Is Love, because What Time Is Love, their biggest pop success, was remixed in 700 different versions, and all the 700 different versions was released, of course. So these two guys came and thought that pop business is very easy right now that they've seen the meaning of sampler, and they decided to make a pop career, and they made it. Their first song released under the KLF nickname, Doctor in the TARDIS, was done exactly in 1 month, and they reached the topest chart entry, and they published a book about it. It's called The Manual, and it's an easy step-by-step guide how to make a number one song, pop song. Like, that's simple, that listen to this and this pop show, and write down your favorite choruses, write down your bass line that you like, get studio, make some tea to the studio engineer, how to make a contract, how to sell yourself, how to have the contact with your distributor, and they just documented what they've done in 1 month. So they just revealed the secrets of pop music in 1 month, and this easy step-by-step guide really works. So they went to the highest success as it could be, and they were heavily controversial on pop music, as they were decided to appear in Top of the Pops, the biggest youth music program on the BBC, and they first decided that they should kill sheep on the stage and have some blood with themselves, but they were now changed their opinion, because they would like extreme noise terror band to contribute with them. This band is playing noise metal, I think, or something like this. Very, very interesting stuff. And this band, Extreme Noise Terror, is vegetarian. So they went to Top of the Pops on screen, and they played the song What Time Is Love with an extremely edited version with a noise metal band. So it was really crazy, I can say. And then they won the British Awards as well. And can you imagine that between Elton John and George Michael came to KLF with Extreme Noise Terror, of course, and started to play something like his... I can't really compare it to anything, like just noise. Then these guys get a bit more crazy in a way that, for example, they bought an island and get the whole English music journalist society together, brought them there for 1 week of having fun, and then fired up the whole island, and they documented it on a video. And then they were publishing whole page advertisements in Guardian and such high art magazines, questioning the meaning of high art. Like, they founded a prize for the baddest artists in England, and they just thought it very seriously. So every year they have the baddest artists in England. And basically, in the US, they developed a cult of Mubu. What is something like Atlantis, or I don't know, they don't know as well, I can say, because they thought that a myth is always good for business. Like, if people don't know who are you really, it's nice. Then they got really bored of the whole thing and retired, deleted the whole catalog, whole back catalog of their records, so nobody can say that they done it for money. And they're now making controversial pop tunes like Que Sera Sera, which was recorded with the Jewish... Okay, so it's recorded with a very interesting name, Core. I can really say the name of them. And was just released... it's just the Core, and it hasn't been released, never. Just once, when they had a nice peace contract in the Far East for 500 copies, because they thought this peace contract would worth 500 copies, and if the word peace comes up, they release the whole song, really. Right now, in September, they've done a public appearance in London National Theatre under the nickname of 2K, and they released a song. It's called Fuck the Millennium, and they are set up a free line to call. You can call it free from England to say your opinion. What about the millennium? Should it be millennium or not? So they are a bit crazy, but this act is in some sense one of the biggest pop acts, because they sold, as I've mentioned, 700 different remixes of What Time Is Love and stuff. So this is just from historical bring, and what kind of crazy people was going around in the late years. I should mention for the last a band called Utah Saints, who are English guys as well. They were famous about just to use samples. So these guys never ever wrote any melody, any rhythm or stuff. They just stole or just bought it. And they were done it in a very controversial and ambivalent way, because one of their most famous songs, The Something Good, contained a Kate Bush while she was singing, and contained Slayer bass line, for example. And they put the whole stuff together in a way that it was okay. It was it's an organic unit, I can say. So these guys, as I consider, were the most nice of this whole scene, because they made a new quality they used Eurythmics as well, and they used any kind of pop music and make it together, make put together as a new quantity and quality as well. How we come in the picture? I can say that my generation, who was growing up in the information revolution, was not really interested in those synthesizer stuff. I had a Commodore 65 some time ago, and I wasn't the guy to play around with filters and oscillators and stuff. It was nothing new to me. Like, I had no time to play around with them. I just wanted the sampler. I didn't know the time it's called the sampler. When we got the Amigas and stuff, we knew that this is the instrument for ourselves. I would just record something and play it back and just modify it. It's perhaps has the roots somewhere. Here comes a time warp. In the 70s, when a guy called William Gibson wrote a short story with the title The Fragments of a Hologram Rose. It was about that if you consider the holistic worldview, you know, the hologram has a total three-dimensional picture of something that really exists. And if you break this hologram to pieces, every piece has one view, or if it's a bigger piece, some more views of the three-dimensional object. So the holistic view says that, as we can go back to Hermes Trismegistus in the ancient Egypt, Hermes Trismegistus said, like, what is up there is exactly what is down, and vice versa, as I can say, it's a very simple way, that if you know a part of something, you have a view of the whole stuff. And our generation, with this information boom and this information revolution, has no time, has no chance to know some piece of the world totally. We're just collecting the pieces of the pieces together, and we have just point of views from such things. We're trying to collect ourselves in this way. If you can read that short story, it's worth it. So William Gibson, Fragments of a Hologram Rose. From this point of view, as the Kraftwerk imagined it in the start of the 90s, the exact German kid would go back after the school, would switch on his sampler and synthesizer, switch on his radio, listen to pop tunes, and would select the favorite pieces. Chorus from this song, bass line from that song, concept from another song, and would construct himself the song he do like the most. And if we consider this as a new concept in pop music, that it should be like going back to the roots. It should be like, if you look around, how much of us listen to folk music right now? Or how much of us plays folk music? How much of us plays music in the classical sense? In the beginning of this century, folk music was brought away of people. And if we consider sampler as a creative tool, some kind of new folk music. Like, you have the access to make your own music. Perhaps from prepared pieces, but if we look in traditional folk music, there are prepared pieces. So in traditional folk music, there are cliches, and there are typical melodies and stuff. In this pop music, there are cliches and there are prepared stuff, but the other way. For presenting this, and probably some controversy, I have two guys in my mind right now. One of them is Armand van Helden, and one of them is Todd Terry, perhaps the most known pop music producers right now around the world. This Todd Terry guy was born in Brooklyn and is DJing since 1984. And he is the guy who made what I call the EBTG effect, the Everything But the Girl effect. Everything But the Girl as a full band was working about the same time, since about the same time, about 1984, and playing this post-wave intelligent pop, same during the last 13 years. And they had this song called Missing. Everyone knows it, I think it's a very popular song. And it was nowhere until came Mr. Todd Terry, who put a groove under this song, just one groove under the song, and then the song has sold in 3 million copies worldwide. 3 million. And why I'm interested in this groove, I can show you this groove, I have it. It's not the real one, but it's the audio. So this is the groove. I can show you some presentation of the groove, and I have some more information about it. The interesting thing about this groove is that Mr. Todd Terry uses this groove since 4 years for almost every of his remixes. Every. And it's really true. You can look after it. And this groove, so one remix of this Todd Terry worth right now £20,000, and the remix contains the ability to use this groove, nothing else. So if you take, for example, Cardigan's Love Fool Teeth Frozen Mix, which is Todd Terry, it uses the same groove. If you take another one, it uses the same groove for 4 years, and the groove has magic, as we can see by the Everything But the Girl case. Everything But the Girl was playing the same music and come and sold 3 million copies. I don't know what's magic in it. I don't really know. Just should have some revealing stuff, like have a spectrogram of it, or look at the frequencies he used, perhaps something subconscious in it, or have a look at the three-dimensional surface analysis of the groove. It's noisy, I can say. It's noisy about, I don't know which frequency is it, let me check it out. It's very noisy, about 5 kilohertz. Okay. Boy, it's ended. Another guy is Arlen van Helden, who was born up in Boston and DJing since, I don't have the information, I've lost it, and was working for a company called X-Mix and making remixes. And he has a big groundbreaking success with the remix of Tori Amos' Professional Widow, Armand van Helden's drum front mix. Yeah, this is the drum groove I show you. Okay, it's very similar to the previous one, like it's a average house track should be, but it's not so noisy by 5 kilohertz, I can say. This guy has done the same thing. So I have heard some of his remixes, which is drum and bass or stuff, but he almost every time uses the same groove, and it works. Like as well, because Tori Amos' Professional Widow Armand van Helden Strong Funk Mix was the most successful remix of 1996. That's fact. Another one stuff as well from Arnold Sahara, the Funk Phenomenon, which is contains nothing but the drum groove and the sample, the Funk Phenomenon. It's a breakdown of stuff, but really nothing else in it. Let's listen to the drum groove. It's a bass line, the drum, and there is a sample somewhere. Okay. It's not so noisy as well. By 5 kilohertz. And if you go back to Torino's Professional Widow, this guy used this very simple drum groove. That's all. And he has an original bass line from the song. Some samples. 2 seconds, and there are another 2 seconds of sampling, and that's the song. nothing else. And from this, I just have a consequence that the song is not anymore the melody, is not anymore the rhythm, but the sample. I couldn't have anything else on my mind. And Armitage Helder has revealed that he, as a musician, has only two instruments, two samplers, nothing else. And I think, considering this song, it's too much from him, for him. One sample would be enough. I don't want to be so long, just the conclusion, but if it's a conclusion or stuff. There's another way of this sampling revolution that we call video sampling. As the computers became much smaller and much faster, it could be done that with a desktop computer we can capture video images, we can play back video images, just like as we do it with the sound. The biggest pioneers was, I think, the Emergency Broadcast Network, the EBN group, who could be known from a very special place, because this group has done the visuals of the Zoo TV tour with the U2. So all the project stuff and the whole thing was done by the Emergency Broadcast Network. And the name of the guy comes up because the advisor who said that Emergency Broadcast Network should be used was Brian Eno, who has somehow produced the Zurop album as well and the Achtung Baby album as well of the U2. And the keyword comes up. What is the name of the current U2 album? Pop. The whole thing is about pop. They use the creative tools, the creative credits of Mr. Howie B, who is a DJ and who is a dance musician for this album. And if you try to compare the U2 before Achtung Baby and the U2 now, Discotheque is a dance song. Discotheque is a real disco song without any remixes, just as it's done and as it's on the album. I consider this group, the U2, always as a kind of seismograph, because the Achtung Baby album was done in Berlin right after the fall of the wall, and they are always trying to make their new material somewhere that something is happening, I think. The chameleon of the pop music, David Bowie, said just dance music is the new rock music, and he's done his drum and bass style latest album like a presentation of this. There could be two ways, if you consider it. There could be a passive way, a more desirable and comfortable way, with the upcoming of the Idorus, as you have perhaps read from William Gibson. Idoru is a virtual personality, is a virtual star. I don't want to explain it way more, but you can find information on the web about Date Kiyoko, who is the first Idoru in my sense, that she's a pop star. And she doesn't exist. She's generated by computer artists. She has a personality. She has a voice from a singer. She has another voice from a radio broadcaster when she makes interviews. And she had the choreography of a real dancer, but the girl is constructed in a computer. And there are lots of fans around the world who fell in love with her. And it's true. And it works. And mostly in Japan, I can say right now. So one of the way of this sampling and this pop phenomena, as I can say phenomena, is to get the whole thing more passive, that if you have no time, we render your sociogram and we provide you the possible best. To start with your inner desires and stuff. But if you have the active way, you could be the star, you could kill your idols, as Axl Rose's t-shirt stated in the tour of I Don't Know What, that you can make it as Kraftwerk has in mind. I think so. I think I was enough un-understandable, so I should right now stop, but
Yeah.
There are two real consequences to this thoughts for me. One is the project called The Pool that is about distributing music freely and with new forms of copyright through the internet. I think I'd say something more about it in the evening, the discussion. And another way is to have a late documentation about the following of the KLF's manual, so how to construct pop music right now, how to construct dance music, easy to guide, step by step. Thank you. Any questions? KLF has a very good information site on the internet, very good information site, so the whole story is covered on the internet with, I can say, 200 kilobytes of information on each site, and just plain text, so it's very good. I'm just trying right now to contact them as they're back to the pop arena.